Self-confidence goes hand in hand with winning, with self-esteem, with success and happiness in everything you do. The more self-confidence you have, the more things you'll try. And by the law of averages, the more things you're likely to achieve. The more self-confidence you have, the less you'll be affected by temporary setbacks and disappointments. The more self-confidence you have, the more likely it is that you will have a long, exciting life full of riches, rewards, and self-satisfaction. One of the starting points of self-confidence is for you to recognize that you have tremendous strengths of ability and character that you can bring to bear to accomplish almost anything you want. You are extraordinary. The odds are more than 50 billion to one against there ever being anyone with the unique combination of talents, skills, and abilities that you bring to your life and to your world. And the incredible things that you can do and be, no one knows, not even yourself. But the one thing we do know is that virtually everything noteworthy that you will ever achieve will come from your ability to identify your areas of greatest strength and then to capitalize on them in every situation. Each person has one or more areas of excellence that, if properly exploited, would enable them to be and have and do almost anything they could possibly want. Each person, as the result of years of education and experience, has developed possibilities that make him or her different from all other people. And the men and women who are achieving the most in every field are invariably those who have taken the time to identify their areas of greatest strength and then to capitalize on them continuously. We said earlier that life is the study of attention. Where your attention goes, there will your heart be also. The people, things, and events that hold your attention are indicative of your entire mental makeup. The things you are interested in are an indication of what you should be doing more of. In one longitudinal study examining 1,500 men and women who started out eager and ambitious at the beginning of their careers, they found that only 83 of them, over the course of 20 years, became millionaires. When they went back and studied the attitudes and decisions of these people as they had evolved over the 20 years, they found that every millionaire had one thing in common. Every one of them had chosen a field they enjoyed. They had gone to work in an area of endeavor in which they were extremely interested and which held their entire attention. They had then thrown their whole hearts into becoming very good, developing the strengths necessary to succeed in that area, and then capitalized on those strengths by becoming better and better progressively over time. The conclusion of the study was that success, wealth, and happiness seemed to occur when a person was completely preoccupied doing something else. The wealthy people in this study never set out to make a lot of money. Instead, they set out to find a field that they really enjoyed, and then they devoted themselves to it. The money came as an afterthought. The flip side of this equation is that you will never really be happy or satisfied until you have found a way to apply your unique human capabilities to your life and to your work. I call this the feeling of divine discontent. It's a feeling of uneasiness and dissatisfaction that arises whenever you're not fully challenged by what you're doing. To enjoy high levels of self-confidence and self-esteem, you must be working at the outer edge of your envelope. You must be stretching your capabilities continually. You must have a feeling that you are growing day by day with the challenges that your work is putting on you. Without that feeling of challenge and growth, you'll experience discontent, and this is a good sign. Discontent and dissatisfaction almost always precede a constructive change that puts you onto the fast track and starts you growing once more. We spoke about how important values are to your self-confidence. Men and women with clear values who are living their lives consistent with their highest aspirations are those who have a deep sense of self-confidence and well-being. We also said that the most important value you can have is the value of integrity. Integrity is the value that guarantees all the others. Having integrity means that you will not compromise on what you believe to be right in any area. Integrity is absolutely essential if you want to capitalize on your strengths. It means, more than anything, looking at yourself honestly and making your decisions based on the fact that you are an extraordinary human being. Your feelings are very valuable clues to your choices and behavior. Your peace of mind and personal satisfaction is perhaps the most accurate guide you will ever have to doing what is right for you. In addition to integrity, courage is the most important single quality you can have if you want to be happy and self-confident. If integrity means being honest with yourself, then courage means having the ability to follow where your heart leads you. It means having the ability to push aside all other considerations in order to remain true to the very best that is in you. We said earlier that fear is the greatest single enemy of self-confidence and self-fulfillment. It's not that people don't know what to do, it's usually that they're afraid to do what their hearts tell them to do. But when you build yourself up step by step and gradually overcome the influence of fear, your whole world opens up before you. Your self-confidence rises so high that there are no longer any limitations on what you will attempt or what you'll commit yourself to. One of the greatest of all Impressionist painters was a man named Paul Gauguin. He had a family and worked in the post office in Paris for many years. But in the evenings, he visited the cafes frequented by the painters of Paris, getting to know them and asking them questions. He was fascinated by painting. The whole idea of painting absorbed his attention. It was all he thought about, and yet with a family and a full-time job, there was no way that he could devote himself to the painting he wanted so badly to do. One day, after the age of 40, in a move that shocked everybody, he gave up his job as a postal inspector, left his family, and moved to the South Sea island of Tahiti. There, he began painting. His paintings now are worth hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars, and hang in the finest museums in the world. He is considered by many to be one of the most important painters of the last 300 years. In a way, he was like Grandma Moses in that he finally decided to follow his heart and concentrate on what he had been interested in for all those years. Now, to follow your heart, you don't necessarily need to make dramatic changes in your life or your relationships. What you do need to do is to see yourself honestly as you really are and have the courage to channel your energies and focus your strengths into your areas of greatest potential. And I promise you, when you do this, you will know beyond the shadow of a doubt that you have made one of the best decisions of your life. Each person has great strengths and potentialities, and each person is put in this world to harness those strengths and apply them to benefiting themselves and mankind. The life stories of all the great men and women are simply stories of people who discovered their strengths and utilized them to the fullest degree. Churchill was a great statesman and orator. Florence Nightingale was a tremendous organizer. Florence Chadwick was an incredibly strong swimmer. Abraham Lincoln was a far-sighted and compassionate politician and president. Mother Teresa is a truly loving human being with an infinite capacity to care for and support the sick and dying people of Calcutta. Joe Montana is a quarterback with an incredible throwing arm with the San Francisco 49ers. All around you, you see men and women who have grabbed their major talents, like catching a pass in a football game, and are running for the goalposts. And you can do the same if you have the courage to follow your heart. Before I go on, no discussion of strengths would be complete without a discussion of weaknesses. Strong people have strong weaknesses as well. In fact, people have far more weaknesses than they have strengths. You may be strong in some talents, but weak in hundreds of areas. Weaknesses are an inevitable and unavoidable fact of life. As Peter Drucker said, "All innovations must be simple if they are to work, because there are only incompetent people to carry them out. The one thing that we will always have in abundance is incompetence." Now, Drucker wasn't being unkind. He was being realistic and pointing out that most people are incompetent, just in different areas. The challenge with human weaknesses is that unhappy and unsuccessful people have a tendency to focus on them. They become preoccupied with their weaknesses and think about their inabilities too much of the time. They lose sight of the fact that each person also has strengths that may need to be developed, and that these strengths can and will bring them everything they want. Instead, they dwell continually on their areas of incompetence rather than on their areas of excellence. You may do the same occasionally. You have areas of great potential strength, and you have multiple areas of weakness where you perform in an average or mediocre way. We said earlier that the law of concentration has an inordinate impact on the person you become. Whatever you dwell upon grows. Strong people are those who dwell upon their strengths and abilities. Weak people are those who dwell upon their weaknesses and their inabilities. But to develop and maintain high levels of self-confidence and the success and happiness that goes with it, you must consciously choose to dwell upon your strengths most of the time. One of the best questions you can ask yourself over and over is, what can I and only I do that, if done well, will make an extraordinary difference in my situation? Success comes from staying at a particular thing, the most valuable and important thing you could be doing, until you succeed. Every great human achievement is preceded by extended periods of dedicated, concentrated effort. But there's little to be gained by digging frantically if you're digging in the wrong place. And this brings us to the importance of self-assessment with regard to your strengths and your weaknesses. The critical issue in strategic planning is to increase the return on equity invested in the corporation. It is to allocate and deploy assets in such a way that the rewards that the company earns are greater than they would be in the absence of the planning exercise. We start off with establishing clear values, a clear vision of what the company wants to become in the future, and a written mission statement that describes the strategic objectives and the positioning for the company. Each person needs to do the same for himself or herself. The purpose of your personal strategic planning is to enable you to increase your return on energy. Since your time is your life and your mental energy is your most valuable resource, your job is to organize your efforts in such a way as to give you maximum rewards and satisfaction for energy invested. Each company and each product or service either has or must develop a unique selling proposition. This is the way of differentiating the company and the company's products and services from the competition. Often it's called a competitive advantage. Sometimes we call it an area of superiority. In every case, it is essential to determine how and where and why and in what degree a particular company differs from every other company that is competing with it for the right to create and keep customers. And what applies to companies applies to you. You are the president of your own company. You are the president of your own personal services corporation. You are in business for yourself. No matter who signs your paycheck, you are working for yourself from the day you take your first job to the day you retire. You may go to someone else's office or company, but you are always self-employed. The failure of many people to recognize this and to behave as though this were true is a major reason for low self-confidence, underperformance, unhappiness, and failure in working life. As the president of your own company, selling your services in the marketplace to the highest bidder, you are completely responsible for identifying your own unique selling proposition. What is it that you do better than anyone else? Why are you special or different? What is your area of competitive advantage? If you had to write in 25 words or less exactly why someone should hire and promote and pay you to do a particular job rather than hire, promote, and pay someone else, what would you point out as your area of superiority? Many people will have a tough time with this question. What matters at this point, though, is that you are asking the question at all. The very fact that you are thinking this way is moving you rapidly into the top 3% of working Americans. Your first question is, what is my unique selling proposition? Your next question is, what will my area of competitive advantage or unique selling proposition be in the future if I make no changes from what I'm doing today? Your next question is, what could my area of competitive advantage be? Of all the areas where you might be able to develop an area of superiority and become really good, taking your values and goals into consideration, what could they be? And the final question, perhaps the most important question on this subject, is the question, what should my area of competitive advantage be? If you could be good at any one thing in the future, whether in 3 months or 3 years, and consistent with your desire to live a great life, what should your area of superiority be? A friend of mine built a company and sold it a couple of years ago. He had money in the bank and he decided to change careers. He had lots of time to think about it and make the right choice. So he went to an industrial psychologist, a friend of his, and took a battery of tests and underwent several interviews to find out what he was ideally suited to do in a new career. At the end of this process, his friend, the industrial psychologist, sat him down and told him that his greatest strengths were consulting and presenting professional development seminars for managers and salespeople. My friend got a little bit angry. He said, "But you know that I'm afraid to speak on my feet in front of a group. You know that it makes me nervous and I become tense even thinking about it." His friend said, "Yes, I know that's true. But you didn't ask me to tell you what would be convenient and easy for you to do. You asked me to tell you what would be the right thing for you to do. And the area where you have the greatest potential strength at this time is in consulting and training managers and salespeople." My friend realized that what he was saying was true. He then went out and took courses where he learned to overcome his fear of public speaking. He learned how to give presentations to a professional audience. It didn't take long, and 6 months later, he began his own consulting and training business. He's now doing extremely well, and he's never been happier in his life. It often happens that your strengths are like muscles, undeveloped and requiring a long period of exercise to build up to the point where you can begin to win competitions. Your starting point is to sit down and set goals for yourself, to decide where you are now and where you want to be in the future. What additional strengths and abilities will do more to enable you to increase your return on energy invested? In what area will a particular strength be useful and valuable to you and enable you to stand out from others? So you begin with a process of self-disclosure. In determining your strengths for the future, you begin to engage in a search process to explore all the different areas where you may have hidden talents. One form of self-disclosure is for you to fill out a series of questionnaires and tests that examine parts of your personality and skills of which you might be unaware. Some years ago, I personally went to an industrial psychologist and took a battery of tests to find out my strengths and weaknesses. And much of my adult life has been affected by what came out of those tests. The tests pointed to areas where I had natural talents and abilities. They also revealed my personality weaknesses and areas where I had little interest or talent. And they can do the same for you. They may save you years of hard work in the wrong job. If you have the time and money, a detailed process of personality and career counseling is a very valuable exercise that can have a major influence on the rest of your career. But if you lack either the time or the money, there are many books full of self-grading tests available in the bookstores. You can take these tests yourself, and they give you very accurate feedback. There are several companies that have developed entire batteries of self-grading assessment instruments, each of which can give you insights into your strengths and weaknesses in particular areas. There are also a series of exercises in self-analysis and self-disclosure that you can engage in yourself with just a pen and paper. These exercises can often open your eyes and help you to see possibilities that may surprise you. Starting in childhood, you have learned how to do and perform a remarkable variety of tasks. You have a tremendous number of skills and talents that you have developed over time, many of which you simply take for granted. Perhaps one of the reasons why so many people have such low self-confidence is because they've never sat down to make up a list of how talented and capable they really are. So, this first exercise for you is to write down a list of everything you do on a regular basis. Write out all your roles and the parts you play from the time you get up in the morning until the time you go to bed at night. If you are a parent, cook, a dishwasher, a driver, a shopper, a reader, a writer, a worker performing various jobs, a buyer, a seller, a negotiator, a teacher, a manager, a salesperson, a typist, a telephone answering person, whatever else you can think of, be as detailed as possible. Walk through your day minute by minute and hour by hour and write out everything that you do over the course of a day, a month, and a year. When you've completed this list, you will be amazed at how many skills you have developed and which you use on a regular basis. The second part of this self-disclosure and self-analysis exercise is for you to now make a new list where you begin to cluster the various things you do into categories. One of your categories may be a parent. Under the parent heading, write down all the things on your list that you do as a parent that are part of parenting. If you're a manager or a salesperson, or if you hold any other position, write down everything that you do in your job, day in and day out. If you play sports, put sports as a heading, and write down all the physical activities that you engage in. If you're interested in reading, write down all of the subjects you read about on a regular basis. When you've completed clustering all of your roles and activities into groups, the final step in this exercise is to set priorities on each group. Which group of activities is most important to you? Which group of activities is second most important to you? If you're going to be sent to a desert island for an indefinite term and you could only take two or three of these activities with you, which ones would they be? When you've numbered your clusters or groups by priority, you will have created a very clear picture of who you are and what is valuable to you in life. Your next questions might be, what do I need to do in each of these areas in order to get the very most satisfaction and enjoyment from this area? What do I need to do more of and less of? What do I need to get into or get out of? What is more important within each cluster and what is less important? If I had to choose, how would I choose and select among the various things that I do? You'll be amazed at the kind of answers you start to come up with. In my experience, you'll be surprised at the clusters that appear at the top of your list and the clusters, some of which take up an enormous amount of your time, which are not really very important to you at all. But in order for you to really know yourself, you have to take the time to analyze yourself like this on paper. A second exercise which is very helpful in learning more about yourself and which has been a turning point in the lives of many people is to turn to someone close to you and ask him or her what they think you should do with your life. Ask a person you trust what he or she thinks are your strong points and your weak points, your strengths and vulnerabilities. What advice would someone who cares about you give to you about the kind of work you should be doing and the kind of talents you should be developing? Even people who don't know you very well will often be able to give you insights about yourself and your possibilities that will be extremely accurate and may even be in areas you haven't even thought about. I remember driving with a business associate to an appointment that was some ways out of town. We had a chance to talk as we were driving along, and I was sort of wrestling in my mind with what I should do at the next stage of my career. I was seriously considering getting into the business of doing seminars and eventually producing audio cassette programs like this one. On a lark, I turned to him and asked him, in all honesty, if I was going to change careers, what do you think I'd be good at? He sat there and thought for a while as we drove along, and then he turned to me and said, Brian, I think you'd be very good at speaking and training and doing seminars. You do a lot of reading and research, and you seem to enjoy sharing your ideas with other people. The best use of your time, in my estimation, would be sharing your ideas with audiences. Now, up to that time, I had seldom spoken publicly, and I had never done a seminar before. I won't say that that incident was the turning point for me, but it was the final assurance that I needed to make the decision to become a professional speaker and trainer. This business associate, a casual acquaintance, could see it clearly. Whatever you seem to enjoy the most is a very good indication of where your strengths lie. Your strengths may be completely hidden, but by asking yourself these questions and facing the answers unblinkingly, you will begin to uncover them. And it's when you uncover a potential strength and begin to develop it so that you can use it in your life that you begin to feel really terrific about yourself. Your most important job is to apply yourself where you can make the greatest positive difference. This will be the area where you get your highest return on energy. When you're working and expanding your capabilities in an area of greatest strengths, you feel wonderful about yourself. You feel like a winner. You enjoy wonderful feelings of self-confidence and self-esteem. In addition, it's also very important for your happiness that you develop a proper perspective on the inevitable weaknesses that you will have in almost every area. And here are some thoughts with regard to weaknesses that may be helpful to you. The first thought is that almost every weakness can be viewed as a strength inappropriately applied. If you use one of your strengths where it's neither required nor helpful, it can often be perceived as a weakness. For example, I had a gentleman working for me recently who is extremely aggressive, and he found himself in a management position. As a manager, his aggressiveness made him the kind of person that no one wanted to cooperate with. What I had forgotten was that his major skills lay in selling, in an area of individual achievement. His aggressiveness was a strength in selling, but a weakness when he was put into a management position where his strength could not be used properly. Many of the so-called weaknesses that you might have are merely strengths being used in the wrong place and for the wrong purposes. A weakness may simply be situational. There is an old saying that when you go into the woods, you must expect the mosquitoes. Sometimes you'll be criticized for the things you do, and you may have a tendency to think that you're weak in these areas. But it may be that criticism just comes with the territory. As an example, I speak on sales, management, and motivation to a great number of people, a great number of times, and in a great number of places. People sometimes come up to me and they tell me they didn't like my talk. Now, more than 99% of the letters that I receive are highly favorable, but there are inevitably people who, for some reason, are not happy. These are the inevitable mosquitoes that go along with my profession. And you'll find that there are inevitable complaints and criticisms that go along with whatever you do. They may not be indicative of a weakness at all, merely an opinion or an observation by another person. You may have a personality weakness that has been caused by a previous experience. Someone may have taken advantage of you in the past, and you may be hypersensitive to being taken advantage of again in the future. The slightest suggestion that a person does not completely approve of your behavior might cause you to react negatively. This may be seen as a personality flaw or weakness, while in reality it's merely a result of your previous reinforcement history. It may also be something that will be helpful for you to decide to get over. Your weakness may be amenable to education. Often, the only thing holding you back from extraordinary accomplishment is a little bit of learning. If you take the right courses, listen to the right audio tapes, and read the right books, that may be all that you need to do to become exceptional in your field. And finally, what appears as a weakness may be a key indicator of the type of work or activity that you should not be engaging in. It may be that you don't enjoy that area of endeavor at all. If you try to do something and you consistently do it poorly, this may be a way of your finding out that this is an inappropriate field for you. Take the time to analyze yourself carefully. By practicing disclosure to yourself and others, both in written and spoken form, you'll develop a higher level of self-awareness and self-honesty. As you become more knowledgeable about your strengths, you'll become more self-accepting of who you really are. And as your level of self-acceptance goes up and you begin to really respect yourself for your unique talents and abilities, your level of self-esteem and self-confidence will go up as well. When you minimize or downplay your weaknesses and simultaneously identify and maximize your strengths, you will become a peak performer in everything you decide to do. Your level of self-confidence is closely tied to your level of physical fitness. Everything that you do to improve your physical well-being will have a positive impact on how good you feel about yourself. In fact, every effort you make to take better care of yourself will raise your self-esteem. We've said that you always act yourself into feeling, and you control your actions. Whenever you make a specific, concrete action toward self-improvement, your level of self-appreciation and self-liking goes up. You consider yourself to be a more valuable and worthwhile person. You believe in yourself more, and you have greater confidence in your ability to do other things as well. On the other hand, if you let yourself run down physically, you always seem to have a nagging feeling that you're not fulfilling your responsibility to yourself. Whenever you place your career or anything else ahead of your health in your hierarchy of values, you have a tendency to feel uneasy and inadequate. Deep down inside, you know that your health is paramount, that no success in anything is of any value if your health is impaired as a result. Nature always demands balance in life. And the fundamental balance is between your level of physical well-being and your external activities and accomplishments. Whenever you get out of balance, you feel vaguely uneasy and you know that you are somehow out of the great mainstream of life. The key issues are health and energy. With high levels of health and energy, you feel terrific about yourself and you feel more competent and capable of meeting the challenges you face every day. With high levels of health and energy, you are more positive and self-assured. You are sharper and more alert. You sleep less and you sleep better. When you are trim and physically fit, you radiate a form of animal magnetism that causes people to react to you in a favorable way. You are more relaxed and more effective in your interactions with others. You're more admired and respected by the people you work and live with. Most of all, you respect yourself much more when you know that you've paid the price in terms of sacrifice and self-discipline to take excellent care of your health. Earlier on in this program, we repeated the old maxim, you become what you think about most of the time. The better quality of thoughts that you take into your body, the more mentally healthy you will be in every respect. You also become what you eat. Your body is a chemical factory. It is continually creating new cells and eliminating old dead cells and waste material. Your body is controlled by your autonomic nervous system, which regulates the chemical balance in your billions of cells every minute of every day. It is nothing short of miraculous. But your body, like any factory, can only manufacture finished products with the raw materials with which it's supplied. The critical measure of your physical health, as we said, is your level of energy. Everything that you do requires energy. The more energy you have, the more different things you can do and try, and the more you'll accomplish. The higher will be your self-confidence and self-esteem. You must be continually thinking about how you can build and conserve energy with everything that you take in. This should be a top priority. Energy is produced in the human body as the result of your absorbing three ingredients. The first is food, the second is water or liquids, and the third is what are called impressions. We'll talk about food and liquids for a short while, and then we'll come back to impressions later. The starting point of feeling terrific about yourself is to eat the right foods and to eat for higher energy. Fortunately, there's so much research available to us now on proper diet that we don't have to guess. There have been some exciting scientific breakthroughs over the last few years in nutrition, and if you simply follow them, you'll notice an almost immediate increase in energy. Robert Haas, in his book, Eat to Win, talks about the high-performance diet and the fact that it consists of 75% carbohydrates, about 15% proteins, and only 10% or less of fat. In fact, there's an avalanche of research and proof now that demonstrates that you can eat all you want and still lose weight as long as you eat foods that the body burns off rather than stores. The body burns off carbohydrates of all kinds, while the body tends to store excess proteins and fats around the waist and hips and thighs. The ideal diet for high performance consists of eating lots of fruit, vegetables, and lots of whole grain products. The more colorful the fruits and vegetables, the more vitamins and minerals they contain, and the better they are for you. Fruits and vegetables act as a form of roughage, or nature's roto-rooter, keeping your system clean and light by eliminating toxins and waste products continually. Whole grain products have the same impact and also contain proteins and fats in the limited quantities that you require. Simply shifting your diet away from bacon and eggs to fruit and cereal in the mornings will cause you to be sharper and more alert for the entire first half of the day. Benjamin Franklin, in his autobiography, talks about the fact that at lunchtimes, while his co-workers were stuffing themselves on the free food provided by their employer, he would judiciously chew on a loaf of bread and take a long time to eat very little. He would always satisfy his hunger in this way, and at the same time he would read and prepare for the afternoon. Later in life, when he became one of America's most wealthy and respected men, he said that the starting point of all his success was the habit of eating frugally at lunchtimes. Harvey and Marilyn Diamond wrote a book a few years ago called Fit for Life. The book became a bestseller on the New York Times book list, and millions of people read it for its unorthodox suggestions about diet. Many nutritionists disagreed with the recommendations in the book, and the subject is still quite controversial. Nonetheless, what the Diamonds simply said was that the greatest consumer of energy in the human body is the process of digestion. If you can make digestion easier by combining your foods in such a way that they do not require so much effort or energy to break down and assimilate, you will have more energy available for other things. Of this conclusion, there can be no doubt. If you eat fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, because they are closer to nature, they will digest faster and you'll feel lighter and more energetic. The Diamonds then went on to say that when you eat proteins, your body secretes acids to break them down. When you eat starches, your body secretes alkalines to break them down. But when you eat proteins and starches together, like meat and potatoes, or eggs and toast, or fish and rice, your body secretes both acids and alkalines, each of which neutralizes the other in your stomach, and your food fails to digest. The digestive process, in effect, is brought to a halt. Your stomach is determined to break the food down before it passes it into the small intestines. When the acids and the alkalines neutralize each other, the body works vigorously to produce even more acids and more alkalines. This draws blood and energy from other parts of the body, making you feel tired and drowsy after eating a large meal. But if you eat proteins and vegetables, or starches and vegetables, rather than proteins and starches together, this digestive problem doesn't occur. You can eat as much as you like, and you will still feel light and clear-headed. You will still get what we might call the Benjamin Franklin effect and be able to perform at your best for hours after eating. The fact is that we eat far too much protein and fat. The body simply does not need as much as we take in to build up new cells. And both proteins and fats are extremely hard to digest. They contain more calories per ounce than any other food. If we take in more than we require, the body simply uses an enormous amount of energy to break it down and then stores the extra protein and fat for use later. In Dr. Robert Jorgensen's work, which has been entitled Eat and Grow Thin, he concludes that the greatest enemy in human health is fat and cholesterol of all kinds. He shows that people can dramatically increase their levels of energy and reduce weight at the same time by simply eliminating fats of all kinds from the diet. Now, while it's true that we do need a small amount of cholesterol for balance, the average person consumes far, far too much fat in the form of butter, margarine, and a variety of oils that are used in the preparation of many foods. One of the reasons that people consume too many fats is because foods containing them seem to have more taste than foods that are cholesterol-free. This question of taste is an ongoing dilemma, but the bottom line is that if you want to, you can train your taste buds so that you really enjoy foods that are also very healthy for you. One of the best of all health habits is the drinking of 6 to 8 large glasses of water each day. Many people start off every morning by drinking 1 or 2 large glasses of water, and then they have a large glass of water handy throughout the day. They largely discontinue coffee and tea and soft drinks and instead satisfy their thirst with water. The evidence is now overwhelming that drinking large quantities of water will have a dramatic and positive effect on your health. Just try it for a day or two and see. In eating the right foods and in the right combinations for higher energy, there are 3 poisons that you need to avoid. We call these the 3 white poisons, and they are sugar, salt, and flour. The average American consumes approximately 160 pounds of additional sugar every year in the form of desserts, soft drinks, alcoholic beverages, pastries, candy, and who knows what else. Sugars are used to enhance the flavor of food and often to preserve their lives on the supermarket shelves. But these are what are called simple carbohydrates. They give you a temporary lift and a long-term drop in energy. The ingestion of simple sugars causes your pancreas to secrete large amounts of insulin into your bloodstream to soak up the additional sugar. The pancreas, overreacting to protect you from this imbalance, always secretes too much insulin. The result of this excessive activity is that it extracts even more blood sugar than you have and leaves you feeling tireder than you were before you took the candy bar, Coke, or donut in the first place. When you eat healthy foods, on the other hand, you're consuming a form of complex carbohydrate. This is any kind of food that has to be broken down by the body for you to get the nutritional value and energy that it contains. The very act of stopping the consumption of extra sugars, eliminating desserts, and getting the sweet taste you desire from fruits and fruit juices will cause you to start feeling better from the first day. The second white poison is that of salt. The average American requires about 2 pounds of salt in all in a year, and the average American consumes about 20 pounds of salt. Salt is the most common product used to preserve what are essentially dead or inert foods on the supermarket shelf. Many products have salt as their primary ingredient, and the fact is that you get enough salt in your diet naturally without ever adding much more than a pinch when you're cooking or preparing dishes for various meals. Many people get into the habit very early in life of putting salt on everything, even before they taste it. However, when you stop adding salt, you'll start to taste a wider range of flavors than you have in the past. You miss these flavors now because you neutralize them all with excessive salt. Consuming too much salt can also be very bad for you. It leads to hypertension, irritability, high blood pressure, fatigue, and water retention. Many people are several pounds overweight because excess salt always requires water in suspension to hold it in the body. If you simply stop consuming all extra salt, relying instead on the natural salts in the foods that you eat, and simultaneously start drinking 8 large glasses of water per day, you will start to wash out all the extra salt your body has stored. In any case, the more water you drink and the less salt you consume, the better you'll feel, the sounder you will sleep, and the more energy you will have. The third white poison to avoid is white flour. The problem with products made with white flour is that white flour is basically an inert substance. It is dead. It has been made white by bleaching flour that has been thoroughly cleaned in advance of all nutrients. When consumers complained that white bread contained no food value, the bakers promptly responded by pouring chemical vitamins into the process and calling their product enriched white bread. Enriched white bread products are simply those into which vitamins have been poured, all of which are promptly killed in the 350-degree baking process, so that what you get has no food value at all aside from a few carbohydrates. One nutritionist even said that you'd get more food value from white bread if you flushed it down the toilet rather than ate it. And the reason, of course, is that if you threw the white bread away, you would still be hungry and you would be more likely to eat another food that might contain some nutrition. If you simply shift from white bread products to whole grain bread products, you'll get more vitamins and minerals, more taste and flavor, and you will have more energy and better digestion than you could ever have eating products made from white flour. There are other things you can do to increase your health and energy. The New York Times had an extensive article a few years ago on one of the greatest breakthroughs linking eating to health, longevity, and long life that's ever been made. They called it Undereating Without Undernourishment. Laboratory rats that had been put on very lean diets lived up to 50% longer than rats that were allowed to eat everything they wanted. The researchers found and continue to find that a person who eats lean and mean, who eats light foods and eats less of them, a person who, in Ben Franklin's words, eats to live rather than living to eat, will be much fitter, healthier, and will have more energy. He or she will need less sleep and have a greater sex drive. More than anything else, eating lean and eating products containing high levels of nutrients at the same time reduces the incidence of diseases of all kinds, and if the experiments with the rats are any indication, it may be the key to increasing the average human lifespan from 75 years up to 100 years or more. When anthropologists examine the lifestyles and eating habits of men and women from tribes throughout the world where it's common to live to the age of 110 years and more, they find that whether in Peru, the Soviet Union, or among the Hunza tribe of northern India, these peoples have 3 things in common. The first is, as you can imagine, they eat lots of fruits, vegetables, whole grain products, and lean source protein. The second factor they have in common is that they live in mountainous areas and engage in a lot of what we call today aerobic exercise. The third thing they have in common is that in their cultures, older people are highly respected and they remain deeply involved in the goings-on of their communities. They feel valuable and worthwhile, and their attitudes toward themselves and toward their communities are very positive. One final point with regard to nutrition and its association with health, happiness, self-confidence, and long life is the importance of regular elimination. Now, a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains not only gives you a wide range of nutrients, it also assures you a smoothly functioning digestive system. One of the best ways to start a diet or to clean out your system is what is called a sea salt purgative. 2 level teaspoons of sea salt, not regular salt, in a quart of warm water, drunk first thing in the morning, will go through and flush out your entire system in approximately 1 hour. Many people who have gone on cleansing diets and fasts, including herbal laxative teas and fruit juices, have been astonished to find that even after a week, their body is still eliminating toxins and waste products that have been stored up over the years. But fortunately, if you eat lots of fruits, vegetables, and whole grain products, as I said earlier, they will serve as a natural cleansing agent, keeping your internal system clean and your bodily functions regular. As a result, you will feel more positive, more energetic, more clear-headed, and you will be happier and more effective as you go through the day. There are 2 additional keys with regard to what you take into your body that are closely associated with health and long life. The first is moderate to nil alcohol consumption. This means that ideally you should not drink more than 1 glass of alcoholic beverage per day, and no more than an average of 1 per day over the course of a week. Alcoholism is a major problem in America today, and cirrhosis of the liver is the 2nd or 3rd major cause of premature death. Successful men and women are virtually all careful and conservative when it comes to the ingestion of alcoholic beverages. The Greeks were right when they recommended moderation in all things. Moderate to nil alcohol consumption is a key health habit for high performance. And by the way, if you do drink regularly, you can prove to yourself whether you can take it or leave it by setting aside 1 month each year where you drink nothing alcoholic at all. I learned this from a friend many years ago, and my wife and I do this as a regular discipline every spring. Many people are convinced that they drink only for pleasure and that it doesn't really matter. Well, it's easy to prove. Just don't do it for a month and see what happens. And here is my prediction, based on ample experience. If instead of drinking something alcoholic, you drink fruit juices when you come home in the evenings and when you go out for dinner, you'll be amazed at how much more energy you have. Within a week, you'll find that you feel wonderful, that you're having a great time without alcohol. The next thing is that you will notice how alcohol-intensive much of our society is. You'll begin to notice the high level of alcoholic consumption around you, not only in your social affairs, but in television and magazines, on billboards, and as a regular part of the lives of many people. It's an interesting exercise. Try it for yourself and see. The next part of health and fitness that is tied to high levels of self-esteem and self-confidence is your weight. There is nothing that diminishes our self-esteem faster than to be overweight in a world that respects and admires fitness and thinness. It does no good to say that you are big-boned or that you have a glandular problem. The fact is that you never gain weight from anything that you don't eat. Overweight is caused by taking in more calories than you burn off. If you increase your burn rate and decrease your caloric intake, you lose weight as naturally as the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. One of the fastest ways to increase your self-confidence is simply to lose a few pounds. And you start getting down to your correct weight by setting it as a goal and then by making a plan to achieve it. Exhaustive research has now shown that diets don't work. The diet industry today is a multi-billion-dollar industry devoted to helping people lose weight by helping them to visualize, affirm, and eat smaller portions and better food. But the real key to losing weight through diets is to reduce your intake on the one hand and to burn off the excess weight through exercise on the other. What this does is to lower what is called your automatic set point, the weight at which your body stabilizes. This is the point to which your body automatically adjusts when you stop disciplining yourself and watching what you eat. And you can only lower your set point through exercise. The reason that diets don't work is that people typically go through what is called the starve and binge cycle. They starve themselves so they feel so hungry that they begin to dream of rewarding themselves with good food once the diet is over. If you look upon food as a reward for any behavior, your chances of losing weight are almost zero. The key to permanent weight loss and the health, fitness, and self-esteem that goes with it is to change your entire attitude about eating. Change the mix of foods that you eat and change the quantity of those foods. Make the firm decision that you will become so involved in achieving goals that are important to you that eating will become a secondary consideration. You will gradually lower your set point and then eat so well that you don't have to worry about your weight again. And this, of course, brings us to the next essential part of health, fitness, and self-confidence, and that is the need for regular and proper exercise. Exercise is wonderful for you. Engaging in regular exercise causes your brain to release nature's natural morphine called endorphins, and it gives you a natural high and a feeling of well-being and happiness. Even people who don't like exercise and who have never exercised very much in the past can eventually become positively addicted to a regular exercise program because they feel so good about themselves and because of all the other ancillary benefits that go along with it. The law of life says simply that if you don't use it, you lose it. It also says that with regard to your physical body, the more you use it and exercise it, the better it performs for you and the longer it lasts. You should exercise and fully articulate every joint every single day. To feel at your best, you need the three keys of strength, flexibility, and endurance. You need to do exercises that strengthen your muscles, like calisthenics and working with light weights or even heavy weights. You also need to do exercises that extend your muscles and increase your flexibility, such as toe touching and back rolls and yoga. And especially, you need to do cardiovascular exercise, what we call aerobic exercise, to build up your endurance and to improve your overall circulation and health. The wonderful thing about exercise is that when you first begin an exercise program, you feel tired out and you'll drag for a few days. But after this initial break-in time, you'll start to feel more energetic and more alert than ever before. In fact, the cure for low levels of energy is high levels of exercise. The more you work out and train, the more energy you have. The very best aerobic exercises require that you work out 3 times per week for more than 20 minutes each time. You only begin to get what is called the aerobic effect after 20 minutes of exercise. In fact, in the first 20 minutes, you simply burn off glucose in your bloodstream, and every minute after 20, you will burn off extra fat that has been stored from overeating in the past. You will be working toward lowering your set point. After you've exercised aerobically, your body continues to burn excess calories for another 5 hours. When you combine aerobic exercise with a correct diet, the combination can be dynamite. In less than 30 days, you will be a different person. Your posture will be improved, your smile will be bigger, your eyes will shine, you will bounce out of bed in the morning, and you will feel terrific about yourself. The 4 aerobic exercises that are best for maximum endurance and fitness are, first of all, running 3 times per week for more than 20 minutes per time. Cycling is another wonderful exercise and is superior to running in that it puts no weight on the ankles, knees, or hips, while at the same time giving you a tremendous workout. Again, all you need to achieve and maintain maximum fitness is to ride an exercise bicycle or a normal bicycle for 20 to 30 minutes, 3 times per week. Swimming is another tremendous all-around exercise. By swimming for 25 minutes or more, 3 times per week, you'll get all the aerobic points that you need for maximum health and fitness. Swimming will also tone up your entire body, expand your lungs, and give you a stronger heart. And the final exercise, which anyone can do, is simply walking. If you walk vigorously, you will improve your heart and lungs, you will strengthen all your muscles up to your torso, and you will greatly improve your digestion and elimination, and you will feel much, much better about yourself. The two obvious times to exercise are in the morning before you start your day and in the evening at the end of your day. But it doesn't matter when you choose to exercise, as long as you do it as a regular part of your life. Write it into your schedule just as you would an appointment with your boss or with an important customer. Many people exercise at lunchtime and find that a vigorous walk combined with a light lunch enables them to perform far more effectively for the entire afternoon. The last two keys to health and fitness are, first of all, proper rest, and second of all, a proper attitude. To get proper rest, you need to sleep 7 to 8 hours per night. You need to take time to sharpen your axe. You need to take regular vacations and mini-vacations. Sometimes the very best thing that you can do is to go to bed early and get a good night's sleep. One of the most important rules that I've ever learned for health and long life and peak performance is to rest completely for one entire day out of each week. Even God rested on the seventh day after creating the world. And when you feel that you do not have time to rest, that is when it is most important for you to break completely and just relax. What everyone finds is that if you take a full day off each week for rest and recreation, you'll perform far better and get more done on the other 6 days than you ever would if you worked straight through. The final key to health and fitness is a proper attitude, or what we referred to before as impressions. A positive mental attitude is absolutely essential to good physical health. A cheerful and sunny disposition leads to a healthy and vibrant body. And the way you take in your experiences, the way you interpret them to yourself, your impressions of what is going on around you are absolutely indispensable to your mental and physical health. So the final key to health, fitness, and self-confidence is a proper attitude. Keep yourself optimistic by looking for the good in each person and each situation. Approach your life with an attitude of positive expectancy. Look for the valuable lesson in every experience. Look for the opportunity or benefit in every setback or obstacle. Refuse to allow your emotions to be dictated by external events. Make the decision to remain calm, happy, and positive no matter what happens. Remember, positive emotions build and generate energy, while negative emotions use up and deplete energy. And energy is the key. If you eat well, exercise well, rest properly, maintain your proper weight, and keep a positive mental attitude, you will be an outstanding performer in everything you do.